Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Atlanta Business Radio. My name is Matt Davis, filling in for Amy Otto, who's on assignment. It's great for me to be here again. I'm the to remind those of you, our previous listeners, I'm the president of BMT Promotions and Talent and the 1975 Heisman Trophy winner. What I love about the show, listening to it and being on it, is that we get such a great variety of business owners, and I think for those of you that listen out there can learn so much. Really, it doesn't matter what kind of business that you own. There's certainly something to be gotten from all different types of industries. And I want to start by introducing my guests. I'm going to actually let them introduce themselves by their name and what their business is. And we'll start with the man to my left.
Hi, I'm Blake Cooper. I'm president of Cooper Music here in Atlanta, Georgia. We're a family-owned piano business, and I'm the fourth generation. We've been in business for 104 years.
Hey, I'm Todd Sumrow. I'm the owner of Urban East Consulting Group. We do concept development for restaurants and food and beverage concepts, and we've been in business for about 15 years here in the Atlanta area.
Which, not close to 104, but 15 is okay.
Exactly. I can't hold a stick to this guy.
And this is Kevin Fuller. I'm the president and owner of Electronic Environments. We've been around since 2002. We are an electrical and system integration company here in Atlanta, Georgia.
Fantastic. So I actually want to start out with a few questions for you, Todd, and then we'll kind of open it up for everybody, because I think there might be a lot of folks out there either wanting to start a restaurant or own one that isn't quite what they cracked up to be because they thought it was going to be this great thing, and it ends up being a money pit, a time sucker, and not the dreams that they had. So I guess my first question is, what exactly is it that you do? What is restaurant concept development?
Well, if you think about opening a restaurant like writing a book, you know, you're really telling a story to your clients. And all those elements that go into developing a good story are the same elements that go into developing a great restaurant. And that's what we do. We coach and consult with aspiring restaurateurs in making sure that they're telling a cohesive story that's going to resonate with their client base. So, you know, we work with first-timers, people who have never been in the restaurant business before. We also work with existing restaurateurs who have a concept that maybe needs to be rebranded or needs to be refreshed. We do everything from mom-and-pops to hotels to food service management concepts. So we cover the gamut when it comes to food and beverage.
So if I'm a guy that owns five or six restaurants, I might know that I need to hire someone like yourself. But if I'm a first-timer, how would I even know to find you, or how do you find those people?
Well, they can always find me on my website. It's www.urbaneats.net. And you can also Google us under Restaurant Consulting, and we pop up pretty close to first or second on the page there. You know, we also get a lot of referrals from people who we've worked with in the past. And so somehow people find us. I don't have the exact, way they go about it. But somehow people who are interested in getting in the business eventually find us.
And so are you at a point now where you're never sort of trying to find out who's opening a restaurant that you can help? They're always finding you? Or are you guys still sort of beating the bushes, so to speak?
Yeah. I mean, we're always, the recession really, hurt our business like it did many others. And certainly have seen an uptick here in 2010. But we by no means have, too much business. We're always shaking the bushes and doing something to generate business. So
what do you think the biggest misconception is for people that once they open a restaurant find out, the bad news?
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of them. A lot of people go into it thinking that, they've got $50,000 and they're going to be able to open a restaurant, or they've got their grandmother's lasagna recipe and they're going to be able to cook that, open the doors, and, there's going to be a line out the door. And that, it's a really hard lesson to learn for first-time restaurateurs that, hey, this is a real business that takes a lot of money, a lot of research, a lot of work on details, homework, like any other business. So it's not just something you can, you know, sort of raise a flag and people are going to, you know, come to your business right away. It takes a lot of work.
I'm going to ask you a question. I'm a watcher of a lot of Food Network, okay?
Yeah.
My wife has turned me into a bit of a foodie. I used to just eat sort of whatever was put in front of me.
Sure.
And now I'm actually a bit of a snob.
Right.
The old version, the English version of Gordon Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares,
yeah. Like
the American version was horrible.
Yeah.
It was just made for TV drama nonsense. But the old version, did you ever see it?
I can't say that I did.
It's okay. It's really good, and it's very real, and the people that he approaches have, you know, certain situations, and he comes at them from a very real place. But here was always pretty much the message every time. Simplify your menu.
Right.
Focus on one thing.
Yeah.
Whether it's we're the best Italian in this village,
right.
Or we're the, you know, what do you call it? Home cooked. What do you call that?
Homemade.
Whatever that word is.
Yeah.
We're that, and you're going to come
right.
for that, and keep the menu at like 7 items.
Yeah.
Because
exactly.
Most people have like 80. Would
yeah.
you say that's a key to success?
I really do. Simplicity. If you look at a lot of the successful concepts around Atlanta and elsewhere, simplicity wins the day. And now that you mentioned the Gordon Ramsay show, I know exactly what you're talking about. And I think a lot of restaurateurs try to get too complicated and try to appeal to, you know, too wide of an audience, and you're not going to appeal to everyone. And so the basic rule of success is to do what you do and do it very well. Keep it simple, and to your point, do 10 things fantastic on the menu and be done with it. So I think there's a lot of truth to what you said.
All right, cool. Well, I'm going to open it up now to everybody. So
awesome.
I want you to think about, you know, your business, Todd, not just like other folks' business. As I said, that's one of the things that I really enjoy about this show is hearing about different approaches. And again, for me, I always like to learn that kind of stuff. So I guess the first thing I would ask is for all of you is what are your core values? And how does that separate you from your competition? And I'll start with Mr. Fuller.
Well, Electronic Environments, our core values is great personnel. You know, we strive on building a great team, a happy team, and that is delivered to our customer in the same way. You know, when we have people that are work, that are happy to be at work, happy to be there, and love what they do, it really gives the customer a sense of ease. As we grow, my employees are learning new things, and they're getting more and more excited about what we're doing, you know, and it shows, and it opens up opportunities and doors. So for us, our core values is building a great team.
Okay, great. Todd?
Yeah, I'd have to agree with Kevin. I think team is really everything, and surrounding yourself with people who are motivated and have a stake in the underlying purpose of your company and delivering a product to the customer is really key, and especially in this day and age. So,
and how about you?
Well, in my case, it's basically having a legacy to present to the customers. They're buying from me. My name's on the door, so I can take a personal interest in their families and their musical happiness, you know, what they hope to get with their children. And that's basically our, you know, history is really our brand, because in selling pianos, certainly nobody needs any. So to have the customer come in and get information about something they don't know anything about, and then develop a certain amount of comfort, so to speak, with the people they're dealing with. And also, once they get it, you know, whether they're going to get the emotional benefits, you know, with their family, and music is something that we support with, you know, the after the sales stuff, like delivering it and tuning it and making sure they have a teacher. And, you know, everybody hopes for the best for their children. And, you know, that's what we try and focus in on is, you know, what the byproduct of the music does for them and their family.
And when you say that you're the fourth generation?
Yeah, and it's been kind of a challenge because, you know, my father, he's 83, he still comes in and tells me that I'm not doing it good enough. As a matter of fact, he drove in on Saturday and watched me do everything in the store. And, you know, I mean, obviously he cares enough about me, but it's like here I've been doing it 47 years and I'm still just this kid. And that can be a bit of a thing. But, you know, going through generational changes is a difficult challenge, and I'm involved with it right now. my mother and dad need to be taken care of by my sister, which she does the accounting. So all of a sudden the office is a bit dysfunctional and, you know, the kind of things that a lot of businesses don't deal with for many years. So we're right involved with that now.
How old were you when you knew that you were going to, in fact, be the fourth generation and you were going to go into, you know, the family business?
Well, working since I was 10 was kind of like being in slavery. you know, my father, he kept all the money, gave me an allowance, and, you know, it was just really horrible. But, you know, when I got into rock bands and I realized that I could, you know, get out in front of everybody and, you know, make a big deal out of myself, that was a lot of fun, but I realized I wasn't any good, so I didn't want to be broke forever. And so, you know, one day I said, well, I guess I could go back and work for the family business. A good friend of mine says, you know, Blake, you know a heck of a lot about the piano business. And I said, well, you know, that's probably the only thing I know anything about, because I couldn't take an education. So anyway, so I went back and started doing it again. And it's funny, I never, ever was acknowledged by my father until I became the number one salesperson. And, you know, because in his eyes, I kind of made the grade. So that took me from the time I was 10 till I was about 42. And, you know, but in these years, it's been better. I mean, here I am in the middle of a recession selling something that nobody needs. So our whole company's had to be reinvented from basically a sales company to a service company. And it's been very traumatic. I've lost people who have been with me for 30 years because, you know, their incomes were hit pretty severely. And, you know, the loyalty we build up over the years in the family environment is tested pretty much daily these days. But, you know, it's still the same thing. You know, people come in, they want to put music in their life, whether it's a church or a family or, you know, whatever we're doing. And, you know, you just start there and go from there. It's an honor to be able to, you know, bring the company into this 105th year now, even though my son's smart enough not to get in the business. He did get an education.
Are you attempting to depress me?
No. Oh, boy.
As far as other business leaders or mentors, and this is I'll open this up to everybody, what business leaders or mentors have helped you or inspired you, either personal or famous?
I think for me, it's come from reading books. I read a lot of biographies, and my favorite is Richard Branson. And he always says, you know, find an industry that needs change and go after it. And that's what I do. You know, my company's electrical and systems integrations, and I know how to own a business. You know, don't ask me to wire anything. You know, I have 20 guys that can wire something, but I know how to run a business. And what I bring to our business is different to what anyone else in the industry brings to the business. Most guys that are electricians, they've been electricians since they were 18. They came out of college wiring. Whereas my background, I came into it as a business owner and how to grow the business. So that's what makes us successful is just researching, just different businessmen, you know, reading a lot of books on men who've done things in the past. And my biggest mentor was a man named James Clements. I owned a janitorial company. It was the first business I ever owned. And Mr. Clements purchased my company and made me a partner in his company. I think I was like 21, 22 at the time. And everything I know to do business now, I did not learn from him. I turned around and did everything the opposite way. And that's been like the biggest success in my life. Like he told me, okay, I'm doing this because this is all I know. Don't do it this way. Okay. You know, he brought me on board basically to change his business that couldn't be changed. He was in the business a good 25, 30 years, and he had always done it one way. And he was like, Kevin, I don't know nothing else. Don't do it this way. Don't do it this way. So that was like one of my biggest mentors.
Yeah. For me, it would have to be my grandfather, and that's my mom's dad. And he was a restaurateur and owned some liquor stores and party stores, as they call them, up in the Detroit area. And when I was a kid, I always loved going over to his store because, you know, there was all kinds of candy and things for me to eat. But he just seemed to lead a pretty happy life, you know. He had really no one to answer to except his wife. And seemed to make enough money to get by. Had a had a nice car and a boat, and he was always up to cool things and raising chickens or whatever he was up to, and he just seemed to go through life pretty darn happy. And that was something that appealed to me. I'd take a look at my dad, who was in the corporate world, very successful at the Coca-Cola company. And while he was very successful, I don't know how happy he was during the, you know, sort of the 9-to-5 grind in a big corporation. So I guess I have to look at both my grandfather and my father and say that I've learned lessons from both of them. So definitely family for me.
How about you, Blake?
Well, in the dynamics of a family-owned business, I've got way too many educators. My uncles, and everybody in my family, there's about 160 of us that worked in the business for 105 years. So maybe the best lesson was the things not to do, more so than the things to do. Simple business principles like keeping more than you spend, that pretty much says it all. To go to some kind of a Harvard business school and learn how to read a balance sheet and things of that nature is probably important. But there's very basic principles, being honest with customers, not making stuff up, making sure that you don't, live beyond your means. It's fairly, easy to do that. I had a guy that was an executive that was highly educated said to me, well, how do you project cash flow? And, he gave me a couple of things. And I just said, well, I don't project cash flow. I save it. He says, well, what do you mean? I said, well, if you save money, you'll have it. And so when you reach times like a recession or, things of that nature, you can fall back on it. And in my own experience of watching businesses, it's just typically they don't have the money and they don't know how to save the money. And, when the times come that, the rubber hits the road and they're not bringing in enough, they don't have any, reserves to fall back on. So I think it's fairly simple,
Yeah, he brings up a great point about saving money and having money. When recession hit, one of the biggest things we did in 08, we hired our CFO, Alessandro Salvo, and that was his big thing. It was like, look, we're in a recession. We need to save money. And our business over the past 2 years has doubled and tripled in size, basically because we're one of the few companies that have cash flow that can take on new businesses. I used to go to bid meetings and look at jobs, 3 years ago and have 30, 40, companies there at that level. Now I see maybe 10 that are still in business. At the level that we bid at now, there might be 5 of us bidding on business. And that's basically because we put money away for the bad times. We always have a reserve so we can buy the next job. We can be in the next job. And, that's what keeps us in a lot of the big contracts, because the contractors know, okay, these guys are stable enough to take on the next thing. They're going to be around a while. They've seen it. So that's a great point that Blake brings up, is you got to have money set aside for the bad times, because that's what gets you through.
Right. And what if somebody says, well, listen, I just started a business and I get client A. I billed him this much. I paid the rent and bought some food. And there isn't anything left. I need the next client. I can't put anything away yet.
Well, I tell you to deny yourself. Don't buy the food. I'm saying that.
He's got a good point, though.
Yeah, I'm saying that metaphorically, kind of. But you got to look at the business as a person. That's one of the things that I've realized. Here I am. I've inherited this business, and it's a thing. And you don't want to kill the goose. You don't want to. So you got to look at that business that way and protect it. And, do the things that are going to, because, if you let your ego get in the way and you say, well, I'm the company, that's the first sign of the demise of what's going to go on. I mean, you've seen that in, society in a number of different ways. So you need to have a certain amount of humility, but then be able to defend it, defend your company and know that your own personal sacrifice is going to reflect through the entire hierarchy of the company, too. You don't want to run out and buy a new Mercedes just because you got a nice big check. No, you put it in the bank, you go along and do things with that are going to incrementally improve that business. And, you'll find that you'll be the one left standing. In my industry, we've gone from 90,000 pianos down to 30,000. I mean, it's just, and consider there's 300 million people, too. It's almost like, why am I even in it? But, hey, we spend, two-thirds less money now, right, to make sure that what's trickling in is sufficient. And, you know, I've gone from 18 employees down to 8. And, you know, we've switched from selling pianos to servicing them. You know, fortunately, there's lots of them out there. They all need tuned and moved and fixed. And, you know, you can get other revenue streams that come in to be able to supplement that. But the ability to change, I think, is what's going to keep the people around to survive.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with Blake on that. And, you know, for the first time, not first time entrepreneur, it's not all sexy. I got to tell you, I've taken second jobs and done some things that my ego did not like, all around my commitment to my business. And so it didn't happen overnight for me, and it was, you know, there's definitely been some struggles, but as long as I kept my focus and my commitment to my business, you know, things started to move in a positive direction, and you get to a point finally where you are getting that critical mass of customers or enough to at least keep you going. Yeah, be ready to do anything and everything to keep your business floating while it grows.
Yeah, I would actually agree with that statement. The phrase that someone gave me early on was you know, keeping the lights on, keeping the doors open.
Right.
So, you know, in those early days of you know, a job that's break even versus profit, or a job that a certain client may have a certain cachet, even if they're not paying what you think you might be worth as of that moment, because it keeps the lights on and keeps the doors open. And, you know, I've had friends who, you know, great business concept, totally stoked about it. And 6 months later, they're like, well, I'm not making any money. I'm going to go get a job. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with getting a job to keep yourself alive and keep those doors open. But once you close the doors,
it's closed.
You're kind of done.
Yeah.
And so it's not going to, you know, especially in the restaurant business, it's not going to happen. Or most businesses, it's not going to happen in 6 months. So if your plan is, if we're not rich in 6 months, then, you know, it ain't going to happen.
Yeah, that's a tall order for sure. It takes a while to develop a, you know, reputation in town, I think. And that's not going to happen overnight. So.
Well, and, you know, that's another good question for you, Blake, since you guys have been around so long. And for those of you in Atlanta, when you're on 85 and you see this big, giant piano, it's Cooper Piano, that's him. You're going to go, oh, great, I know that guy. how do you, I guess, keep perspective as far as, you know, you guys have been doing it so long. Do you ever hire consultants, or do you just say, hey, let's look at things differently? Like, obviously you said you've changed business models a little bit recently, and how do you kind of keep a fresh perspective when you've been around for over 100 years?
Well, I'm a big believer in industry groups. We've been involved with piano dealer groups, maybe 8 to 15 dealers that are in non-competitive markets, and we'll meet a couple of times a year. Success leaves clues. You know, there's really nothing new. You know, my grandfather and great-grandfather, they took old pianos during the Depression in the 20s and 30s, and they'd cut them down, put mirrors on them, fix them up, you know. And so, you know, there's a dealer that's doing it in Detroit now because, you know, the car business is bad. I got a good friend up there that's in the same business I'm in. And, you know, he's having to do things that I can look at that and take the good and try and implement that. I mean, I'm not going to reinvent the wheel. I'm in a 300-year-old industry, and so there's really nothing new. But there's things that I won't see because, you know, you get into a situation where all, you know, business is slow. You know, my brain's in a lockdown mode. So for me to be able to get with other people in my industry that can give me fresh ideas, I think I'm very lucky with that. Not to mention all my relatives that told me I wasn't doing it good enough, all of that. So, you know, if you take all that and lump it all together, you know, maybe I did get an education, at least in my own industry.
Right.
Yeah, he brings up a good point about bringing in mentors and learning from the past. That's a great quote. I'm going to have to quote Blake Cooper, success leaves clues. That was
it does.
That was worth my trip to Dunwoody.
Yeah. Find out what failures do and don't do that.
Right. So, you know, one of the things we're facing now is the challenges of growing. And our company's outgrowing management and our management style. Me and my business partner started the business 10 years ago. And, you know, we've gotten to a point where how we built the company isn't going to take the company into the future. So we're both relearning and reinventing ourselves. And one of the things we did do is we did bring in a mentor who's going to start working with us here this week, next week, and the next year to follow. You know, and it's really hard to humble yourself. You know, I've built this business like my bare hands. I used to run wires in attics a long time ago. You know, some people might deny that, but I did. You know, but you get to a point where you have to say to yourself and like stop believing your own hype and say, I need help. You know, I think a lot of entrepreneurs, they get this dream that, you know, I'm going to do it and screw corporate America. I'm just going to go for it. You know, but you always need help. You know, and one of the things we joke about in the office is we fought so hard not to work for corporate America that now we're a corporation.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, so we have corporate rules and corporate standards and things that you run away from for so many years. And you look back and like, oh, yeah, I see why they have policies and procedures about vacation. You know, I see why they have policies and procedures about, you know, sick days and how to get paid and per diem. You know, entrepreneurs, they tend not to think about the future of their business. And again, that's what one of my strong suits bringing to my business partner was that I came into it as a business aspect, you know, and he had that knowledge of, okay, if we're going to be around in 20 years, what do we need 20 years from now? You know, to be a $5 million company, what do we need to be a $5 million company right now? You know, entrepreneurs always think about, I know when we first started, it was like, oh, dude, we got to eat. You know, we got to eat today. You know, we need a job tomorrow. We got to wire it the next day. We got to get paid the day after that. You know, and once you get out of that mentality and just have faith that it's going to happen for you, I think everything else just, you know, just comes along.
Yeah, I had a business mentor say that to me when I was looking for a check from a client and that check wasn't coming. And I was like, well, should I say this and how should I do that? And he's like, listen, the check's going to get cut when the check's going to get cut. So how would you act if you had 10 grand in the bank?
Right.
And then sort of operate from that place. Because obviously, you know, acting crazy and desperate to your clients doesn't make them trust you or attract more clients. So anyhow, what do you have to add about that, Tom?
No, you're right. I mean, there's nothing like waiting for a check to come in the mail. It's like they said they sent it. Should I call them? But yeah, entrepreneurs, to Kevin's point, think they can do everything better than everybody else. That's one of our characteristics as entrepreneurs, that we think we can do it better. And we don't necessarily reach out for outside expertise or team, and that's really important. And I've learned that myself the hard way. But once you sort of let that go and bring team into your business, you'd be amazed how quickly things can change. So,
you know, I have a woman that works for me that books service calls and tunings and rentals and things, and she's very important to me. And yesterday she was very, very angry because tuners and support people weren't doing what she said they should do. And, you know, they're lazy. They wouldn't show up on time. They wouldn't do this and wouldn't do that. And, you know, I sat and listened to her until she was done talking, and she just said, well, you know, I just want to vent. And another man said, well, why don't you go and talk to those tuners? And I said, well, you know something? Everybody's going to be exactly how I treat them, okay? And I think all too often in businesses, you know, the owners and management don't treat the employees the way they want the employees to treat the customers. And this is like a slippery slope kind of a thing. And, you know, if I got mad and angry and, yeah, the tuner didn't show up on time and, you know, maybe my reputation was at stake. But that's about me. It's really not about the customer. It's not about the employees. And, you know, I got this little saying, you know, I put the customers first, then the employees, and then me. And that's served me quite well in being able to survive the changes in, you know, whatever economic environment we've been in.
And that actually leads to my next question, which is finding good people. I think keeping good people is another subject, but let's just start with finding good people. How have you found the people that you value? How did that happen? This is for everybody.
Wow, the biggest thing for us has honestly been trial and error, in a sad way, but a good way. You know, our business is either feast or famine. So when you need people, you need people. When you don't, you don't. So the biggest thing we've been doing is just coming up with a pool of people that we can pull on whenever something needs to be done. Over the years, you know, myself and my partner, Lee McKinney, we worked for various companies that do what we did. So we have that pool of people from other businesses that come to us and say, hey, we want to work with you guys now because we see where you're headed. So that's been definitely a blessing. The newest thing we have now is one of our project managers started hiring people. Like, you know, I get how dedicated he is to the company, so I let him hire who works for him. And I hold him accountable for the team that he builds. And that's been a great success here lately, you know, because he's so passionate about our company, which I love, that he's not going to let anybody hurt us. You know, he only looks for the best people to work with. He only creates the best teams. And he's like, he's just like a personal employee bodyguard, I would say, out in the field for us. And, you know, I think that's it. It goes back to building a great team. And then the great team builds a great team around them because they're passionate about where they are, what they're doing, and where we're going.
Yeah, I in my business, we're very service-oriented, so we don't have a big staff. And what we do is we keep a cyber staff, if you will, is people who we can reach out to when we need them, contract employees, one-time job contract employees, and that really works for us. And with the new technology that's out there today, you know, everyone's got a laptop, they've got a cell phone. It makes it really easy for that to, for that model to work. So, but like Kevin, I don't think there's any formula for finding great people. You just, you know,
right?
They just come along, and when they do, you do everything you can to develop that relationship and keep them on your staff.
And how about you, the folks that you've had? Have you had them for a while, or how do you find your folks?
Well, that's been the difficult thing for me. I've lost people that have been with me for many, many years. Our industry going through the downturn that it's been through has made it difficult. And, you know, with shrinking sales, it's hard in my industry because, you know, professional salespeople typically will sell things like life insurance, real estate, maybe investment banking, things where, you know, the ability to earn a lot of money is there. And in my industry, it's not there. So, you know, I've got to find people that really love music a lot. You know, they benefit and enjoy in their life through the what it does for the people and that we serve. And, you know, hopefully the money would be important to them, but more a byproduct of the difference that they're making in the world. And I'm hoping that can, you know, bring us back to the, you know, the sales numbers that we once enjoyed. Although I'm not certain that it's ever going to happen. I mean, for people, you know, they come in with a cell phone and they can see the piano and, you know, across the country for a couple $100 less, and, you know, the salesperson can be back on their heels. And, you know, this is a kind of change that's been difficult in our industry because, let's face it, 300 years ago, you know, it wasn't the same as it is now. So changing with what the consumer's doing now has been a big challenge for us coming forward.
Well, you know, you talked a little bit about, you know, you not going out to buy the sports car. But let's talk a little bit about growth. So, you know, for folks that have been in business for a few years and they do want to take their business to the next level, and again, this is for everybody, but I can start with you, Blake. Mm-hmm. You know, the things you need, you know, more office space and more storage space, a better phone system, better computers, like all that kind of stuff.
Right.
I think those are the kind of things that people struggle with because they don't know if they can, quote unquote, bite the bullet now or they should wait until more money comes in. And how would you say that's worked for your business, or what advice would you give folks
in
that place?
I'm a big advocate of not adding overhead. I think as sales go up, overhead goes up, and it's like these two lines that all of a sudden they meet. You know, if I'm going to get a phone system, I'll wait till I have a good month, and then I'll pay for it. You know, in other words, to be able to do the kind of things that you do specifically with your own life and your own checkbook. You know, if you go out and, you know, get all these expenses up and then all of a sudden lose your job, you know, you're pretty much in the tank. So I think overhead needs to be a byproduct of what revenues you're bringing in. So these days I'm saying no. I mean, we're back to the sales level we were in 1991, 92. We fought our way out of that and did very, very well. And, you know, hey, when the money was there and I was earning it, I would, you know, do things like put in computers and do things of this nature that would help our business. But it's, you want to add to what you can do, not, so to speak, you know, do things that really are not investing in your future, paying debt down. That's a great thing to do when you have money. As a matter of fact, it's a great thing not to have debt. And so when, you know, those revenue funds come in, that's what you want to spend it on. And now that sales are down, I've had to contract overhead. Telling people, well, we're not hiring. I'm not going to give raises. I've had to go back to longtime employees and say, hey, look, you know, my health insurance now is not what it was. They know that I'm in it with them, you know, so it's my job to guarantee continuing employment for these people. And so for me to come in and do the kind of things, you have to do it with the right context. As I said earlier in the call or the show, this is a entity. You know, Cooper Music has been around a whole lot longer than I've been here. So it's my job to defend it and protect it.
Yeah, you know, Blake, you said something earlier about during the recession, you guys went from selling pianos to servicing pianos. And I think, you know, tough economic times force entrepreneurs and businesses to look for different revenue streams. And I had a point for this, and all of a sudden I just forgot.
Okay. The question I initially asked was about growth and when to get that new office, when to get the new phone,
exactly.
When to move out of your parents' basement into the next level of business.
Right, and I think you'll just know that. I mean, I think common sense rules the day in that regard. And, you know, to Blake's point, you don't spend money if you don't have to. But I would look at growth as looking for additional revenue streams. We typically in the restaurant business take care of people who have unique and new concepts where that served us in the past. We may have to start looking at taking care of people who want to get into the franchise business and supporting and coaching them through the franchise process. So I look at growth as identifying different revenue streams and different models for growing your business.
For us, growth is a little different. Our concept is, you know, being a service-based business, we have to have the employees in order to get the business, or you have to have the business to hire the employees. We've tried it a couple different ways. You know, we've hired employees, and then you carry the overhead of hiring the employees in the hopes that you get other jobs and it works or it doesn't work. Or you get the business and then you find employees who aren't up to par because you're hiring them at the last minute to get a job done. So it's a very tricky line of how you grow your company, and there's many different ways. One of the quotes I've shared over the years is, you know, build the fence and the sheep will come. But in an economy like this, you really don't want to build too big of a fence and only manage the sheep that do come.
Right. Yeah, and I think and I've heard that phrase before as well. And I think it's what is the fence? The fence truly needs to be, the stuff that you need, not the brand new car.
Right.
But the stuff that is going to service those clients, like if it's people that you're going to need to make a job happen.
Right.
A friend of mine who's new in the business was like, I have to do this, I have to do this, and I want to learn QuickBooks, and I have to do this, and what should I do this week? I said, go get more business. Like,
right.
If you can't think of what to do, like, go make more sales calls or more, what do you call it?
Money.
Networking. Go to more networking events. Talk to people about your business. Like, you do need to figure out your QuickBooks, and you do need to hire a good bookkeeper, like all that stuff.
Yeah.
But if you're feeling overwhelmed and don't know what to do next, pick up the phone and get more money in the door, because that's the key to make it happen.
Yeah.
And I actually want to sort of talk about that next, as far as, because Blake mentioned how he stays fresh with the folks that he's involved with. How have you guys found, because everybody wants to network. It seems like everybody on Facebook has a new networking group. And how do you determine which ones are worth your time and which ones are, here's 20 chiropractors who want me to, give them their business?
Go ahead, Kevin.
Okay. I honestly only network if it's something my vendors are putting on these days. We went from a point where I was the only salesperson at our company, and we were chasing, 20, 30, 50 clients at a time. You know, right now I manage 3 clients that bring us 80% of our work. And, that for us has been a great working model. And I have a sales manager, and he does the same thing, as he builds relationships so that we're not always having to be in networking events that don't produce results. I found that the last networking event I was at, it was a lot of people that were learning how to do something, And, you know, it's hard to find your peers. I'm learning the bigger you get, the harder it is to find your peers. So I don't network as much as I used to anymore.
I look at my potential client base and how do I get my message to them? I know that there are people all over the U.S. opening restaurants, you know, today. And a lot of them could use some good consulting or coaching to make sure that they avoid the pitfalls that a lot of people run into. And for me, it's all about directing my, you know, and I know this word's been used a lot, the social media, but everything I do for networking is done, for the most part, on the internet, through my website. I send out a monthly newsletter now. You know, I have a company that I pay a monthly fee to, and I'll give them a shout out. That's Judy@newtricks.net. And they specialize in helping entrepreneurs get their message out. They've been fantastic for me. And, you know, the moment I began to do the social networking, my hits on my website increased, and I really felt as though I was getting my message out, because I always knew people could use this service. But I don't, you know, in the restaurant business, there just isn't really a structure to open a restaurant. Like, there's a structure to get your CPA. If you want your CPA, you go to school and you take a test and congratulations, you've got it. Well, if you want to open a restaurant, that structure doesn't necessarily exist. And so, you know, that's where our company comes into play, to help people put structures in place for that to happen. And then how do I get to those people through networking? And for me, it's been the social media. And then I do some, you know, I do some industry-specific groups here in town as well, you know, just to stay on top of the local scene. But
maybe you should open a restaurant school next.
Restaurant 101.
Yeah,
U.
There you go.
Sounds good.
Do you get asked to speak at any sort of like conferences or restaurant event kind of things?
Yeah, I've done a few Rotary clubs, you know, and those have been interesting. And I've got an article coming out Friday in the Atlanta Business Chronicle, so I'm excited about that. So yes, I do get asked for expertise from. Speaking engagements in periodicals and newspapers and so on and so forth. So,
are you allowed to reveal any of your clientele? Are there any chefs that we would, or restaurateurs that we would know about?
Well, all I can say right now is watch out for donuts and crepes.
Okay. Look out.
Your relationship with donuts and crepes are going to forever be changed here in the next couple months.
Cupcakes. Is this
exactly.
Right. Is this in Atlanta or nationwide? Or?
I think coming soon to an Atlanta location. Yeah.
Okay. And do you service clients nationwide, or you just
absolutely
try to focus
I've
here?
Got clients in California, Austin, Texas, Oxford, Mississippi. So yeah.
So why is Atlanta your home?
Well, this is where I live. This is Atlanta's a it's because of
Kevin made a look like, yeah. Why wouldn't it be your home?
Exactly, pretty much.
Yeah. Right.
I don't know, the hot babe. Sorry.
right.
To my wife. No, it's a great restaurant.
She's not listening.
You're probably actually right. It's a great restaurant town, no two ways about it. So if you're going to be a restaurant consultant in Atlanta, Dallas, Houston, Boston, New York, the big cities are a good place to be.
Yeah, he brings up a great point about Atlanta. You know, that's a good question. Atlanta is really a good town to be in to grow a business. Even us, we're based in Atlanta, but we work in Alabama. A year ago, we were in 32 states at one time. So Atlanta, it seems like people come to Atlanta to look for the best in different companies. You know, there's a company we work with here that's actually based in Michigan that we work with. So everyone is like seems to be coming to Atlanta. So it's a great place to be, honestly, for business.
I think so too. And I've been to your store, Blake, and I know that you have you've had some folks that people would know. Do you have any interesting anecdotes or famous folks that have come in lately? Or
I waited on somebody last Friday, and my sales guy that's kind of younger than me, he says, that's Tootie. I said, "What's that? Who's Tootie?" And he said, "Well, this is a Facts of Life." And I said, "What's that?" You know, and I'm like 57 years old.
Do you mean Tootie?
Tootie, yeah, Tootie, right. Tootie. And a marvelous gal, you know, I met with her and we talked for a while. You know, she was in there. She is working for Tyler Perry. Her name's Kim Fields, yeah. Mm-hmm. A woman. And she's directing House of Pain and, you know, another production they're doing. And they're looking for a piano. And they actually want to do some filming in our store. I'm going to play a piano salesman, believe it or not, in some movie they're making or something like that. But on another note, we talked earlier about networking, and you know, even though we sell a lot of famous people, I believe very strongly in giving something back, because that to me is probably the most powerful thing that we do. You know, I gave a piano through the Children's Wish Foundation to a young man that had brain surgery in Macon. And, you know, sure, I put it out on Facebook and, you know, some of the things that we would do to push it. But that's not my context. I'm constantly looking for something. The Atlanta Regional Commission just gave me an award, and along with WSB, we donated a piano to out in Austell at a senior center. There was the 500-year floods that happened, I think it was, I don't know, 6 months or a year ago. And we went out there, gave them a piano. There was 60 seniors there singing and playing, and anywhere I can find to make some kind of a difference in the community and get us involved and hooked up with it. Me and my brother presented a piano to Children's Healthcare at Emory that's in their lobby when youngsters come in to get liver transplants and, you know, get coached on how to take, you know, the rejection drugs and all that. The piano's playing. It's an automatic player piano in the lobby there. And, yeah, it costs money to donate it, but, you know, we'd get people that come in. They wouldn't buy a piano anywhere else because of what we try and do to make Atlanta better, you know, the people that could have music. And it's always a music-related thing, you know, because that's what I'm involved with. So that's where I'm going to go with any type of a donation or something where we can partner to make some kind of a difference. I'm very active with seniors, senior citizens in music. It helps them to feel better. There's less depression, anxiety, and loneliness. So for me to hook us up with that, I can't tell you how much business we've written over the years just because the people know that we want to be part of the community. So we're not just here to make a buck. It's kind of like, you know, trying to protect your company as a person. Also protect your community. Anything that you can do that shows that you care, you know, makes you the good guy, where somebody wants to come in and say, "Hey, I want to do business with you." Yeah, okay, Tyler Perry bought a piano from us, and I'm very proud of that. But, you know, we've been involved with fundraisers with him. We're going to take a piano over somewhere on West Spaces Ferry. It's a white piano. They're going to do some kind of a fundraiser. Did a fundraiser with Dallas Austin. He puts the recording studios into high schools. And so we take a piano over there, get a musician. Everybody's got, you know, they're all dressed up and they're trying to raise money, which, you know, we need to do something to help people that are less fortunate and challenged today.
Awesome. Well, listen, thank you so much. Why don't you give your address or website plug one more time?
Yeah, it's cooperpiano.com. That's our website address, and we're at 1610 Northeast Expressway, Atlanta. Come on down. We got lots to show you.
Todd Sumrow at UrbanEats.net. Actually, that's Todd at UrbanEats.net, www.urbaneats.net. And if you're looking to open a restaurant or refresh your brand, give us a call.
Kevin Fuller, Electronic Environments. I can be found at www.electroenvironments.com.
And where are you located?
Northwest Atlanta now.
Sure.
Yeah. Keep thinking.
And I'm Matt Davis, BMT Promotions and Talent. We are bmtpromo.com. I'd like to thank Lee Cantor, our producer, on the boards as always. And please, everybody, look for Blake as the old white piano salesman in an upcoming episode of Tyler Perry's Meet the Browns. We'll see you next time on Atlanta Business Radio.